You're listening to Between the Stripes LOI podcast. Subscribe now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your favourite shows from. Now here are your hosts, Kieran Burke, Jonathan Breyer, and Gary Riley.
Hello everyone, welcome back to Between the Stripes LOI podcast, Series 9, Episode 6 coming your way this week. It is a little bit of an express pod. I'm off to Bulgaria later this week for the Ireland game, so we're going to bang out a pod before I head off, and I'm delighted to say that I am joined as ever by Gary Riley, and we are brought to you by Quinn AV, our sponsor. Check out quinnav.ie for all your sound, lighting and AV solutions. Of course, there's no Premier Division games coming up this weekend because of the international break, but there are some First Division games, including Dundalk against Longford, a very interesting contest to me in particular. We'll talk about that later on, but we did have games on Friday night in the Premier Division. We're going to look back at them in a second. Some big talking points, particularly that hammering for Bows against Pats. We had some statements released by fan groups this week as well, so lots going on in the league as ever. We'll look back at the First Division games as well, and we will predict the First Division games coming up this weekend, and we'll have a bit of a chat about that Ireland-Bulgaria game before we go too. But yeah, let's go straight into the Premier Division, Gary, and we'll start with Shelburne 1, Cork City 1. I think it's fair to say Cork are, they're having a much better start than a lot of people would have expected. I know there was the issues with maybe the bug in the Shells camp and all of that, but let's not forget Cork were down a couple of key players as well. So maybe it was a bit of a more level playing field going into this game than it might have been if those issues hadn't occurred. But as I said, Cork seems to be having a really positive start to the season.
Absolutely. I think especially when we were already saying that they might have a difficult time in the initial few games, like finding their feet or whatever, but they've been much better than what we give them credit for. And you know, getting a one-all draw in Talca Park is just, you know, really fantastic. Really good result for them. But is there a bit of a I don't know how to describe it. Like, you know, you'd expect Shells to go ahead and put like a newly promoted team to the side. But if you look back at the Cork goal, really good from Keating to...
Yeah, it's a tight angle. That's a much tougher finish than it looks.
Absolutely. But the defending in the lead up to it, like the fact that shot was allowed to be taken in the way that it was brutally poor. Like, it was really, really bad defending. And I think Duffer will be making those feelings known. But I think it might be a good time to get a break.
I was going to say that, yeah. I mean, who would have expected Shells to get 1 point from a possible six from their last two home games against Drogheda and against Cork City? So I'd agree with you. I think particularly with maybe that virus going through the camp, we don't know how much it affected them. I know that Meepo didn't start the other night. I know that Mark Coyle didn't start the other night. Caffrey didn't start either. Was that due to the virus or was it just rotation of the squad? I don't know, but all in all, I think you're probably right. It's probably not a bad time for the international break to come.
Absolutely. Like, with the illness, like, probably don't have a, like, do you know, like, the extent of it, really?
No, I don't really.
But like it's all just jibber-jabber, really, isn't it? Like,
even though, like, the players that were on the pitch were they maybe not 100%, it's difficult to know.
Well, that was my exact point. Like, were a few lads playing at, like, 60 or 70 or 80%, you know, probably after, let's say, coming out both ends during the week, like, you know, life's hard enough, like, especially when you're trying to defend a title, and there's, you know, a team was it like Cork coming up with having a positive start to the season, far more positive than we thought, and then, but still have nothing to lose, like, you know, you're still coming up against the champions, like losing 1 or 2 nil isn't exactly a bad thing going up to Talca Park. But they did very well, Cork City, and they were. I'm just thinking about the goal that they scored, like really good poacher stuff from Ronan Keating, but the defending was brutal. Like even the shot that came in, no one was really going out to make a proper block, and we've seen it in the past many times where a 50% blocking attempt results in a deflection and causes a problem for the keeper, which is what happened here. And Keating was on hand to slot at home. And as you said, it was a good finish considering the tightness of the angle.
So it was Shells 1, Cork City 1. Galway United 1, Waterford 0. And Waterford probably just having one a little bit of a quiet spell in the season. They're probably going to get these runs of games, aren't they, where they'll have a couple of good results, a couple of bad results. They're on one of them bad little runs at the minute. As for Galway, they remain unbeaten, and it was probably a typical Galway performance, but I think they were very much deserving of the 3 points.
Yeah, they're running quite well at the moment. Like, they haven't lost a game this season. I think are they the only team? Yeah, Shell's lost already. Yeah, so I think they're the only team left that haven't lost a game. So, really great start to the season. They're getting the few draws in, but they're not getting bet, which is what you want.
Another set piece goal.
Another set piece goal, but look, it doesn't really matter how it comes. Like, I think, as we'll come on to later, like, Longford Town got a couple of goals from set pieces the other night, and you know, they had a difficult start to the season, and it doesn't matter how they come. I know Galway haven't had a difficult start to the season, but they're still putting points on the board in every game, which is very important at the early stages. You don't want to be, you know, floundering 10 or 15 points behind. Of course, remember last season, like, they were in the conversation for the title.
Yep.
Good win here. I think, as you said about Waterford, it's just a bit iffy at the moment, just not a great, you know.
I think you'd put that down to Galway again, though. They really limited Waterford to no chances in the game. They only had two shots on goal, I think, in the entire match, Waterford.
Well, exactly. Like, and I think, but that goes into, as you said, with Galway, their hardiness at the back, their... We saw, like, what we've seen throughout the season already, that they've been exceptional defending and putting their bodies on the line and not making, we'll say, the mistake that, we'll say, Shell's made in the Cork game, coming out with those blocks, getting their bodies behind the ball. So, really good result. But it's another, you know, a home win again for Galway. one thing I noticed, it seemed to be, I don't know if this was a tactic, you know, we've seen managers in the past use the full extremes of, say, the pitch measurements. But if you look back at...
Oh, yeah, the measurements, the dimensions look to have changed a little bit. I did notice that.
Yeah, it seemed to be a much longer pitch. I thought it was a bit more like they just, like, shifted the pitch one to one side. But it seemed to be that they have made it as long as humanly possible in AMDC Park. So I don't know if that was a particular tactic or strategy that was being employed by Galway, but I think it was, it worked out for them. But they are, like, we highlighted it in pre-season, like, when they played against Longford and gave them a hammer in Bishopsgate, they are massive.
Yeah.
Like, they're big, huge men.
No surprise they need a bigger pitch.
No surprise they need a bigger
hole on there.
Like, but even, like, their fitness, even in preseason, like, you could see that they were
really tuned up. Yeah.
Really tuned up, absolutely. Yeah. So, like, they can use that bigger pitch to their advantage in the home games in particular. But look, another good win for them, and they're still unbeaten.
And a very good win for Shamrock Rovers, coming from 1-0 down to beat Drogheda, previously unbeaten, and they were top, and they still remain top after this defeat, Drogheda. But Rovers, 2-1 winners, and a couple of really good goals, particularly the goal from Graham Burke, who I think has started the season so brightly. He has to be a big positive for Shamrock Rovers, the form he's in.
He's class.
Yeah.
Like, you know, he's, like, obviously, like, you know, with Rovers, like, they have, as everybody says, oh, just a wealth of talent and blah, blah, blah. But, like, Graham Burke is... He's sensational.
Healy was very good as well.
Yeah. But I think Healy's goal was just class.
Mm.
Just, like, side-footing it in just from outside the box. Like, that was a really well-taken goal. Like,
And I've spoken to Connor quite a good bit down the years. I got to know him a little bit when he was at Cabin Teely, and he went up north and he scored a few bangers up there. I think it was Ballymena, if I remember rightly. And then he came down to Drogheda, and...
He had a year in Pats as well that kind of never really got motoring there, isn't that
no,
right?
No, but that was last season. But when he came to Drogheda first, I remember talking to him several times about how he wanted to replicate what he had done up north in terms of chipping in with lots of goals, because he is a big threat in the area. And as you saw there with the finish, he can play a little bit with the ball at his feet too. So
that was a lovely goal. Like, yeah, that was really, yeah. Don't know about the celebration. I think that was a bit mad.
But even in the game a couple of weeks ago against who came back and got a point off them that night? The Galway game.
Oh, yeah.
He had one cleared off the line that night. And it was for a centre back. It wasn't one where the ball came to him inside the area and he didn't just lash at it. He took a touch and he tried to pick out the corner. Like he can be quite cultured when he wants, you know, with his finishing. So that was a sign of that there. So he'll definitely be a player that pops up with plenty of goals this season from the back, I think.
Absolutely. No, I don't want to hammer the man either. I thought the defending, I know that with the equaliser for Aaron Green, I know it was a bit of a misplaced pass in the midfield, but
that was a very unlike draw at a goal to concede.
Yes, it was, but I was disappointed with the defending. I thought it was Conor Keighley, I think, that was tracking Aaron Green back, and he just shifted it to his right foot, and I thought the defending could have been a bit better there. I know, like, it's difficult. I know Aaron Green, he's at the towards the end of his career and mightn't have the pace that he might have had before, but I just thought the defending was just a bit quiet, a bit too quiet for my liking. But look, I think losing at home, like, I know the first loss of the season isn't fantastic, and I think I had Drogheda set to at least get a point from the predictions league, but you know, the goal like that from Graham Burke, no real shame in losing against a goal like that. He's really a clutch player. He is fantastic, I have to say. Like,
and even the build-up, it was lovely. It was him and Green that had a little bit of an interchange, and then he just slotted it away.
Yeah.
Before Luke Dennison even had himself set. He took it on so early, Burke, and to be so accurate at the same time, it was a class finish. But they did have their chance, of course, to equalise with the late penalty. Did you think it was a penalty? Personally, I did. McGinty is late to the ball, and who was it? Was it Quinn or...
That missed
Davis. No, that caused the penalty. That got in just before McGinty. I definitely thought it was a penalty.
Yeah, I'd be inclined to agree that it was myself. It was messy.
He did. There wasn't huge amounts of contact. He didn't clatter him, but the simple fact is, the draw of the player gets the slightest touch on the ball.
He gets around it, and like I say, it goes into, like, you know, there's always a talk about, like, you know, the player boots it by him. Never have a chance of getting it.
Yeah.
Like getting on the end of his touch. But I think at the same, when the keeper comes out like that, I felt there was absolutely no need for him to come out there.
Yeah, I don't think so.
The way the ball was, like, he wasn't going to head it by him or over him because there was no real pace in the ball. So I think it was just a really bad decision. And look, he redeemed himself with the save. I thought the penalty was quite poor.
Yeah, very straight run up from Farrell. I thought he kind of telegraphed what he was going to do a little bit, and McGinty, he read it well.
He read it well, but it was the right height for him.
It was an easy save.
So McGinty did well to hold on to the 3 points for Shamrock Rovers.
But I mean, that's a win against Pats and a win away to the league leaders. So that's been a very good couple of weeks going into the international break for Shamrock Rovers.
Oh, absolutely. It's you know, it's lovely for Shamrock Rovers. They've lost two games already. I know they have the game in hand over Cork, which you might expect them to do a job on Cork, but I think it was an important 3 points, as you said, going into the break.
Now, the live game on Friday was Pats and Bowes, and Pats ran out 3-0 winners, so probably don't need to talk too much about the game, Gaz, because most people probably watched it if they weren't at a match. But I think the bigger talking point, and I know our Twitter was quite lively on the Saturday morning, when we shared Alan Reynolds' post-match interview, didn't go down well with the Bohemians fan base more than anyone else. He talked about dominating the game. As I tweeted, he talked about Pats bringing on an extra defender as if it was some sort of crime against football, that they did something wrong. It was a very, very bizarre post-match interview.
It was, and like it was like it was a different game, really, that he was commenting on, to be honest.
I could... You know, if he had come out and said that 3-0 was maybe a harsh scoreline, I probably could understand that. But
as a manager backing his players, you could say that. Do you know what I mean?
To be honest, it wasn't a great game. I was watching this on the Friday. It wasn't the best game I've watched this season. it probably, you know, Pats obviously did deserve to win. Bowes offered nothing in the game. Had it been a 1-0, 2-0 game, fair enough. Three, maybe a bit harsh. But at the same time, Bowes offered absolutely nothing in the game. And when you're sleepwalking through a match, then something like this can happen against a team like Pats to have so much quality. So, yeah, I thought Reynolds' comments post-match were very, very bizarre.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you're 100% right. There's the comments were I don't want to say stupid, but I don't think they reflected the game that everybody had just watched.
Yeah, that's fair.
And it's creating, you know, like let's say, Aaron Reynolds is under pressure, certainly from the Bowes faithful. Coming out with stuff like that doesn't really help the situation. Like it nearly goes in, what game is this lad watching? Mm. Aside from like the issues on the pitch, you're going, what, like, how can he fix them if he's not able to identify anything and he's going on that we dominated the game? I will concede one, let's say, to give him some bit of credit. Like, I think the second goal was when he scored in like the 80th minute or something like that. Yeah. And the third goal was nearly at full time. So you can kind of make a point, like, if you look back, like, we often gave credit to Drogheda down through the years for, like, staying in games, like, being 1-0 down towards the end of the game. And then, you know, picking off or pulling a draw out of the game or whatever and picking up points that way. But I think there's a different expectation in Bowes.
Yeah.
You know, there's like, we should be dominating games. We should be doing this and doing that and doing the other. I did get a couple of messages about how poor they were and how little that was offered throughout the game from Bowes. It's really concerning that they can, you know, have a really good result against Waterford the week before.
And what did we say last week when we were talking about that Waterford game? We said Bowes have to go and back this up, and you said that'll be the problem.
Yeah, they've no. It's not. I've often talked about the identity or whatever in Bowes that's non-existent, and I think that they don't have any identity. They don't seem capable of backing up a decent result.
Well, I've compared them to Spurs in the past. They're very Spursy. They're very Bowsy.
Well, I wouldn't even compare them to Spurs, like, you know.
I think a good comparison, they haven't won a trophy in a long, long time. Look at Spurs, they get a big European result the other night and then they get beaten by Fulham at the weekend.
All right, okay.
Bowes had their great result in the Aviva at the opening weekend, then they had a string of terrible results. They get a great result last week in the RSC and then they get absolutely tonked. I mean, had they lost this game 1-0 and not played that well, you know, it's not that bad. They had a great result away from home. It's still early days for this Bowes team. You could overlook it, but to go out and get absolutely flattened 3-0, we spoke about on last week's pod, you know, the Tim Clancy Pats scenario where, okay, you get your 3-0 win against Waterford, but if you get a string of bad results at all down the road, another bump in the road, you're under huge pressure already. Reynolds straight back under pressure after a great result the week before.
Exactly. And then to pile it on himself with a silly interview like that, like not reflecting anything that really happened throughout the game.
He was heavily criticized at times last season, I think, by Bowes fans for not doing enough of these interviews. Maybe we've seen why.
Well, I'm not sure that his assistant will be much better. we've seen a heap of absolute pony out of him when he was at Dundalk, and I wouldn't have any confidence that he would give a better reflection on a game. But look, I think I don't see where it's going to turn for Bowes. Do you know what I mean? Like, is it going to be, you know, maybe I was going to say a good cup result, but that's not for another 3 or 4 months. I think it was like the August bank holiday that the cup is played,
the League of Ireland teams come in.
Thank you. Yeah. And, you know, where's the reprieve going to come from? Do you know, like, they've been playing shite at home. I think when they won, have they won at home this season? I can't rightly remember. But I think up to that point, they hadn't won a game at home at all. They have won a game at home this season. It was against... Oh, no, they haven't. They won that game in the Aviva. Yeah. But obviously that's counted as a home game, but not a real home game. So, like, I don't know when it's going to be turning. Like, it's been over a year since they won at home from what everybody just be complaining about. So, like, what's going to be the breaking point here? I don't really know.
Yeah, usually in a situation like that, particularly with, like, say, a very high level, like Premier League in England or international football, we've seen it in the past with Ireland managers, the chop usually comes when the crowds drop off. But that's not happening at Bowes. Credit to the Bowes fans. They're still packing out Daily Mount every week. They're still buying the merchandise in droves, despite the football being absolutely crap for the last number of years. So that's probably a saving grace for Reynolds at the moment. But just to bring you some of our listeners' reaction, that tweet we put up of the interview, some of the feedback we got there. Gary Toohey, very poor from Alan. Understand he's under pressure, but he's better than this. Conor Keogh, inverted commas, they surrender, and a load of laughing face emojis. We were 1-0 up at the time, he says. Yes, it wasn't a 3-0 game. 6-7 if Pats wanted it, says Tom. Polo 5-9, he needs the sack. Damien, who's a Shells fan, says, I hope they stick by him. David Coleman, did the 5,000 in Richmond watch a different game? Bowes were desperate.
Yeah. And I think, but that just before that, that's the problem. Like, your eyes don't deceive you, as Roy Keane said before. Like, it's right in front of your face. Like, how can you be so off the mark with anything, with comments like that?
Yeah,
considering that everybody was there watching it and it was on the telly and all the rest.
A good insight here from Mark, who is a Bowes fan. He said, considering he is talking absolute nonsense, it certainly won't go down well. We play slower football than the over 70s walking team. Football sideways, backwards, sideways, backwards again, and then give it away.
Yeah, exactly. And that's not good enough. And, like, we all know that, like, the way Pats are going, you know, they're going to be strong come the end of the season. Certainly that's our estimation of it. Like, you're going to have to, like, try something different. You're going to have to put them under some form of pressure and challenge them in some way. But that's obviously just not happening at all.
It's interesting, Mark mentions that kind of really passive style of football, something I suppose we spoke about Derry at times last year, because I was actually listening to Owen Heary on Off the Ball the other day, and he was bringing up stats about how many times the centre-backs and the full-backs touched the ball the other night compared to how many times it actually went into the final third, and it was really damning stuff. So I'm not sure where that philosophy is coming from at Bowes. Again, you've spoken about maybe some of the individuals on the coaching staff. Is that an influence of some of them? I don't know, but they need to change something and change it quick. Just one final point on Bowes, Gary, before we move on. I spoke about it a couple of weeks ago on this pod, and I don't think you were maybe sure at the time, but I spoke about Lion Moussa, and his physical condition.
Yeah,
that we all knew he wasn't going to be thin and firing and lean after a couple of games, but you'd expect to see him getting sharper and sharper with each game he plays.
Yeah.
He looks like he's getting unfitter by the week. I mean, the physical condition he came on the pitch the other night, that's something from League of Ireland of 20 years ago. And I know this guy has bundles and bundles of talent, and they're banking on him, you know, unleashing that talent at some stage. But surely he's got to be further along than he is in his fitness at the moment.
I think that's a fair point. But that goes into the whole ethos around. Do you know what I mean? Like, we're not, as you mentioned, like, we're so slow in our build up, we're so lethargic. Like, if there's no pressure on him to do anything or get in better shape, because, like, yeah, we know he's like, he could be a ringer. Do you know what I mean? He could be sensational for Bowes, but he's in a team that's in dire straits. Like, he probably would have had 7 or 8 goals if he was playing for Longford Town at the minute. But the team is so bad, so slow. He's there. He's probably without the ball way more than he should be. Do you know what I mean? Like, he's running after shadows and getting absolutely nowhere. And I don't know about the running piece there, but, like, I'm just not really sure where it's going to come from. But, like, just the final, or the actual final piece, let's say, this will be my last thing on Bowes. If they're, like, they're so limited from what we see, they're not getting the ball into their, you know, Moussa, or we'll say they're not getting it into Colin Whelan or whoever's playing up front. Can they not, like, try and play a bit more, like, counter-attacking, or, like, you know, long, getting the ball, just playing it longer, putting the defenses that they play against under a bit more pressure, that they have to head the ball all game or try and clear it all game? You're going to pick up scraps. You're going to get a bit of joy around the penalty box. And maybe if it falls to Moussa, the goal that everybody was crying, that was, you know, creaming themselves about, that he scored down in preseason against Waterford. maybe he might be able to get on the end of some stuff. But if you're pricking around the back all game long and, like, you know, hundreds of passes around, like probably Talbot had probably 100 passes in the game.
Very poor for the first goal too, wasn't he?
Absolutely.
And I know I've seen Bulls fans talking about it online. I don't think Tchoretska did a whole pile wrong last season.
I have absolutely no idea why Talbot is playing. I absolutely don't know why. And I, you know, would have strong opinions on James Talbot. I still, from a footballing perspective, I don't know why he's playing. Yeah. But look,
a lot going on there, Bo. It's not going to turn that quickly. I think I'd probably agree with you on that. Final game
can
of the
week. Can I ask one quick question? If Rennie is showing the door, let's say, who is there anybody around apart from Rory Higgins? Anybody manager wise?
Nobody really springing to mind at the moment.
That's a problem.
I think they need to stop going for these short-term fixes. I think we said it at the time with Devine. Oh yeah, he'll go in, he'll get them firing for 3 months, and that'll be it. I don't know. I think we were a bit more positive about Reynolds at the time, were we? We thought he'd bring maybe a bit more hardiness to them, but that just doesn't seem to have happened.
That doesn't seem to have happened, absolutely. But, like, I was trying to say that, you know, we did give him 3 or 4 windows. Mm. But I think he had a really good window in January.
Yeah.
And that has not materialized into anything better on the pitch.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah.
Let's move on.
Sligo Rovers 0, Derry City 1. There was a bit of controversy about Michael Duffy's goal. I'd like to get your opinions on that before we speak about the Bors statement as well, which we'll cover. But Sligo Rovers 0, Derry City 1. The free kick from Duffy goes all the way through. But I think I can see this is, again, one of those, right? Hayden Cann goes up for a header. He doesn't make contact with the ball, but for me, he goes up for the header. Is he active there? And is he on or offside? I think he was marginally off, but I don't have a wide angle of it. I'm just looking at the players I can see in shot, and I think he's marginally offside. I think the linesman did put his flag up for offside, and then between himself and the referee, they decided Han hasn't touched the ball. He hasn't impacted the play, so we're going to let the goal stand. I want to get your thoughts on all of that.
I don't really, like, we'll say, if you look back at the highlights, right, and you see, I don't think Hennessy makes any motion towards what he's given, if you know what I mean. Like, there's no pointing towards the centre circle or anything like that. It seems to be a bit like no one really knows what's going on. I think he did the right thing in talking to the linesman, but I think he came to the wrong decision. I think...
It was Hayden Cann, I'm fairly certain.
Like, let's say he was offside. If he doesn't touch it, he's within a millimetre of it, and he is impacting the keeper's decision to go and do something.
He's breathing in the keeper's face where he stood there.
Yeah, but he gets really close to the ball. Like, do you know what I mean?
No, he goes up for the header.
Yeah, he does, and he misses it.
He's not jumping to catch butterflies or whatever. He's going up to head that ball. So to me, he was active. So. Look, I can see the frustration with the decision.
But it's not the worst decision in the world.
I was just going to say, I can see how the officials got it wrong. They have one look at it. Did he touch it? Did he not? Did he impact it? You know, depending on where you're standing, where you're looking, you could have a different viewpoint on it. It's not the most egregious decision I've ever seen. Sligo Rovers had a chance late on in this game to get something out of the game. A wonderful passage of football.
Yeah.
From one end of the pitch to the other. And I can't remember who actually gets the shot away. Well, he makes it so easy for Brian Maher. It's straight at Brian Maher. Now, credit to Maher. He gets off his line, closes the angle, does everything a goalkeeper should do.
Yeah, bails them out.
Yeah, he does. He bailed them out. But I'd say he was thinking when he came out, you know, I'm probably going to have to do something fairly good here to stop this. But it was just driven straight at him. So, like, Sligo had the chances to get something out of this game. Okay, one decision goes against you. But we'll move on to the statement. Like, ludicrous stuff.
Yeah, no, and I understand that, but this is just this isn't a Sligo statement. Like, I know Sligo.
Sorry, Bors, Bitterhead Supporters Trust for anyone.
Didn't Sligo come out with a statement themselves? Was that last year? Do you not remember? I was about refs as well. Or am I making that up?
You're probably making it up.
maybe making it up, maybe in a bit, you know, a hate dream that I had about Sligo or something like that. But I understand the, you know, the frustration and this and that and the other. There was obviously, just to be clear, there was no board statement after, you know, the result down in Turner's Cross the week before. No board statement there, which is obviously not great. And no issues with the ref, of course, for, you know, when multiple decisions go their way. So, like, there's obviously that kind of nonsense logic going on there. But what are we looking for here out of refs? Do you know what I mean? Like, I'd say the two of them came to this decision. I would probably feel that it was wrong. But they came to the decision. I'm sure there's a logic to it. And I'm not trying to back up refs and saying, like, you can see how they came to this decision, which is what I'm saying here. But, like, it wasn't the worst decision on the planet.
No.
It wasn't, like, a two-footed into someone's chest that they gave a free the other way for. Do you know what I mean? Like, it wasn't that bad. But I think the general reaction is way over the top.
It's hilarious.
Yeah, I think, like, you know, I think Twitter has made it a very safe space to for every any O'Liga to release a statement about anything. And, you know, that's not really helping anybody here. You know, and like hammering all the community stuff. Like, there's lots of community clubs around the place that have supporters clubs and supporters trusts and supporters this and that and the other that aren't releasing statements about refereeing decisions. You know, I think the supporters, the Borst team or group or whatever might want to go, let's support the club as a supporters trust and leave the statements to the side.
Yeah.
It's absolutely bizarre stuff. Particularly when they didn't have anything to say about the result down in Turner's Cross the week before. And I'm sure all our Sligo fans will be on to us about that as well. But I'd be interested to hear the logic in that decision.
They weren't the only fan group to release a statement at the weekend. We'll
really?
We'll get into the First Division now.
Who was this?
The Blue Army. Had
They were due one.
Every 6 months or so.
I think that's a bit much. Probably a bit more often than that. But look, yeah, okay, well, come on, yeah, okay.
We're actually going to start with them.
All right, straight into it.
Tralee United 0, Wexford 1, and just on the game itself, I think it was Jason Shanahan who was doing the commentary for LOI TV on this one, and he described the winner for Wexford. Wexford stolen it, and that very much looked to be the case from the bits and pieces I've watched of this game. I mean, Wexford go down to 10 men, Treaty are pushing for the winner, and they get just done on with a sucker punch of a goal. And
it's like if that happened in FIFA.
You'd lob the controller again the window.
Straight into the telly, straight through the telly. You'd be just freaking out going at that shite.
And even the fact it came off the post and
right back to the striker.
I mean, they've had such a good start to the season, Treaty. But at the same time, it could be so much better. You think of the opening night against Cove, where, again, I think I remember Jason saying that Cove had stolen it. So he's getting fairly sick of saying that now already. And we're only about a month into the season. Yeah. So that they let the point slip that night. Okay, credit to them. They came back against Dundalk. But then they get this sucker punch against Wexford. So they've had a really good start, but it could be even better. It was actually a decent performance from Treaty. But Wexford showing a little bit of grit here after what was a disappointing result the week previous against Athlone.
Absolutely. I think there was a bit of grit. Like, Wexford had to kind of weather the pressure. You know, there was some chances for Treaty that they could have done a bit better with. I think the... What did you actually make of the red card? Yeah, I don't really have a problem with it. I think it was fair enough. There was a bit of shocking reaction to it. I thought it was reasonable enough, to be quite honest. I didn't think it was that bad. But I do believe the goal was just... It is a steal. It feels 10 times worse than even the result itself. Like, to concede in that manner so late on in the game is just a right kick in the bollocks.
And look, I know when we drill into game by game the way we do on this podcast, we can repeat ourselves some weeks, and I do apologise for that. But I said at the start of the season, there was a lot of talk about some of the players that were brought in at Wexford and some of the players that were re-signed. One player I think was overlooked was the goalkeeper, Paul Martin, been brought in, because we were blue in the face, as you'd say, last season, talking about goalkeepers at Wexford. They tried three or four or five different keepers last season, and none of them really seemed... The lad Conor Stone-Walsh did well enough, I think, when he came in from Sligo on loan.
But that was a huge requirement, though, for them. Yeah. Like, they really needed to get him in.
But Martin's come in, and he's got Premier Division experience from his time at Waterford, and he had a very good game again the other night. He played a big part in Wexford actually staying in the game to then go and get that late winner.
Absolutely, and it's something that has needed to be resolved. I think we're talking about 2 or 3 years, to be honest. Like, we've seen... Yeah. Even like if you remember last year, I think Longford Town were down at home to Wexford. And I think there was like one or two goals. I think Luke Wade Slater got a header to bring it back to 2-1. And that got Longford back in the game. Like he came out about, I can't remember what keeper it was, but he came out about 6 or 8 yards, much to the, like, to his left.
Mm.
Coming into absolute no man's land. He had absolutely no business there. Get out of there. Like, only for he came out of there, the header went in. Do you know what I mean? Like, it would have been, he could have taken it down in the chest. That's just one example I can think of off the top of my head. But there's been so many bad decisions from Wexford keepers in the last couple of years. It's good that they've somewhat resolved it so far. I know it's early days, yes.
And they're without Aaron Dobbs as well. So a very good result without their main striker. Yeah. If that wasn't a sickener enough for Treaty over the weekend, they found themselves then, I suppose, embroiled in... a bit of an online spat with their fan base, the Blue Army, with a statement out. I think her title CEO, Ciara McCormick, who we've had on this pod, she had a statement out on her LinkedIn. So it's just getting very, very messy there. It's a lot of, I suppose, dirty laundry been aired in public on both sides. So it's not ideal because, as I said, Treaty have had a very, very good start to the season. And I'm sure Tommy Barr probably doesn't want all that noise surrounding the team, to be honest.
Well, life's hard enough, like, do you know what I mean? Particularly with Treaty, you know, they're
a new still relatively team. New, yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's the problem. Like, you know, as you said, Tommy has enough grief going on trying to keep players fit. And as we've often said, like, he's lost a couple of important players many times in the last couple of years.
And it's a fairly volatile region for football as it is, so much politics, so much infighting. So this is nothing new down there. But you know, if you're an outsider looking in, thinking of going to the next Treaty United game, you maybe haven't gone in a while and you're reading all this going on, you're probably, do you know what? I can do without that stress in my life.
Absolutely. Like, it's not helping the situation. Like, no. There's a new, you know, set up there that wants to probably try and do something somewhat good.
I could definitely see the argument on both sides here. There'd be certain things I would have noticed about Treaty, how they're operating since the new overlords came in.
Yeah.
And I'd be like, not sure about that. But there's also a way to go about
I think the piece about the abuse is needs to be eradicated. That there's no, that has to be gotten rid of. I obviously, like, you're just hearing two comments from two opponents, like, in this, which is mad to say, like, but there's two separate groups or separate people making comments. And I think, like, some of the personal abuse that Ciara has mentioned she received in her statement is, it's just not on. I don't, like, what help is that to anything? Particularly, you know, it's another new enough club, as you said, down in a particularly volatile area for football down through the years. Like, I don't think that's going to be helping anybody out as the season goes on or as their time there goes on. So I think, you know, there was talk about like a forum of some description or a come together type moment that never occurred. I just think it's all bollocks, like. That's really all I can say. Yeah, really, it's all bollocks.
Less statements needed from fan groups, I think. Just when I was a young lad in Section O, it was just like, who's bringing the drum this week, who's bringing the flags, and, you know, sing a few chants.
Will we get a bus going to this game game or whatever? Like, yeah, I'm saying about the board statement, like, why, who decide, like, where, how is this being decided? Who's deciding that, oh yeah, we need to do this statement here, let's get a statement,
convening of the UN?
Yeah, it's absolute shite. Like, it doesn't help anybody. It's not doing anything for you. Get over it. Like,
Let's move on. Athlone 2, UCD 1. This had an unpredictable look about it going into the game, but Athlone get the win. And UCD, they remain without a win. They've had a very, very slow start.
Certainly have, yeah. And like you would have thought at some point it would have clicked. Did a couple of obviously bad results. I know obviously the opening game of the season wasn't great, but they've never really got going. You know, like even if you look at the, you know, Harps had a really good result away to in the bowl, had a really good result there, pulled it back to 1-1. But like, I don't really know what to make of it because...
Yeah, because like, sorry to cut across you, but I think a lot of people at the start of the year, if they were having a bet on the first division, might have done betting without Dundalk, or, you know, they would have looked for a team, a bit of each way value. UCD would have been one of the names on people's shortlist, I think, to, you know, maybe be second to Dundalk or certainly be in around the top three. Now, look, it's very early days. They had a game called off as well, so they've got a game to catch up on. But they're already 11 points behind Dundalk, and they're 9 behind Cove. Now, again, they have game in hand on those teams, so it's far from an insurmountable challenge to you know, after
certainly so early on in the
games to get back. Yeah. But it's just it's a bit worrying how flat they look. 3 goals scored and 7 conceded in 4 matches.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like they seem to be. What was the word? Like not like blunt going forward. Like you've seen in the past, like how they've been sensational. Like some of the goals that they scored were really well worked. Like lovely football, lots of nice little passing. But that hasn't seemed to have materialized this season at all. They seem to have just not gotten going, and you know that rolls on for another week.
And aside from the pitch, there doesn't seem to be many excuses, because we talked about, oh, you know, Finn will have a bigger impact this season, he'll play more games. Finn's there, he's playing. McManus has come in. I'm looking at the players they brought off the bench the other night: Sean Brennan, Kieran Behan, Mikey Raggett.
Yeah,
great options to be bringing off the bench. So they've got the squad. I know I mentioned the early part of the year, maybe the exertions of playing in some of those younger lads playing in the College Cup up there, maybe the Collingwood Cup, isn't it, or whatever it's called.
Collingwood, yeah,
Collingwood. Maybe we've seen that in the past in years gone by, where sometimes if a lot of their players get a deep run in that, it can lead to a slow start. But it's just particularly worrying how flat they look.
Well, that's it. Like, you know, in particular, we'll say with Athlone, they've had a few ropey results, as we know, and you know, coming down to UCD coming down, you might have thought, right, this is going to be a very tough game. I know it was only 2-1, but like with the way UCD have been going, they would have fancied themselves like, okay, this is another one that we can kind of get right, you know, at Lone Can. I know they won away to Wexford the week before, but like that was a really, you know, this would have been another big test for them, and they came out with flying colours. I just think, you know, you were talking to Dylan Hand after the Longford draw a few weeks ago, and he was like, and he was saying, I think we're over that 5-0 hammering against Treaty. We've kind of gotten it together or whatever, and he felt that they would progress, and they've won 2 games since. So
yeah, two great wins, and like you can see Dylan's logic, I suppose, because McDade gets his first goal the other night. He had been out for whatever reason. He's come in here. He played the other night. He hadn't played a lot. Again, I'm going to mention Tete. I thought he was very, very good again the other night, and even players that came on during the game, one of them scored. Kyle Robinson, the player that we have a bit of a liking for. Noah Baba, who can really, you know, shore up a midfield when required. And Barlow as well, that they've brought in from Sligo. So they've got a good squad. Like even players there that have been, I suppose, mainstays in years gone by aren't getting a game at the minute. The likes of Oisin Duffy, Herman Fuentes, Rodriguez, Lennon hasn't really come into the team yet. Torre, the fullback, didn't play the other night. So they were able to leave out a host of players that last season and seasons gone by would have been one of the first names on the team sheet. So you can see why Dylan Hand was confident that they turned things around. It's a very strong squad at Athlone, and that's why we were all so shocked with the certain result against Treaty and some of the other poor results they had in the first few weeks.
Well, there's no doubt about it. Like, you look back, you know, you could argue the first game of the season, losing 1-0 to Dundalk, that's fine. Yeah. But then coming along and getting absolutely thumped. And also, like, the, you know, the jibber jabber outside of the football pitch around Athlone didn't probably help either. But
seems to settle a little bit, but it's always simmering there in the background.
It's always simmering there in the background. That's the thing. It's never
I've seen a couple of yellows dished out for some of the staff the other day on bench, and it's just a bit bizarre, like the whole thing.
Absolutely. But look, one final point on this game. Really good free kick. I think Adam Verdon got that goal.
Yeah.
Really I thought the keeper's position was brutal.
Say,
I don't know what the hell he was doing there. And didn't give himself a chance. But look, good win for Athlone. They needed it as well.
Finn Harps 1-2. Not a classic this one, but a very important win for Cove on the road.
Well, yeah, I think I said Cove would win, didn't I?
I've got your predictions here in front of me. I think you got a bang on, actually. I think you went 2-1.
Yep,
all of it. 3 points.
really. Look, another good result. Like, it would have been tricky.
It was a scrappy game. It was low quality. Not played in the best conditions. I suppose the big talking point out of this game was the penalty that won Cove the game. Harps fans were up in arms over it. What did you think about it?
You'll have to remind me about it.
It was kind of it was edge of the penalty area. Cove player kind of...
Oh, sorry. Wait, no, I did see this online. Was this like... They cleared it, and actually, he was the only man. I think was that Nigel on commentary was like, he's the only man in the country that sees this as a penalty.
Yeah.
I can't see how that was a penalty. I don't know how that decision.
I could see how it was given, but then the one thing I do kind of
There was no challenge. There was no kick.
Even if you look at the Cove player's legs, it looks like he plants his 2 feet. You know that type of way when you see players going down, they like plant their feet in the ground and kind of.
I would class that as a dive, to be quite honest. I think it was a terrible decision, and look, I don't know.
But look, I always have sympathy for a player, for a referee, when I don't want to say he's been conned, but if the player has simulated a bit of contact there, I'm not saying he did. I only get one look at it really, and I wasn't sure what to think.
I didn't think it was a pen.
But like, if he did, let's say, go down easily or handily. I do have sympathy for a referee when that happens, because they've got to make a decision.
Yeah, and like, I suppose like with the speed that it happened at, but like, I think the ball was hammered away.
Just to add to that, there was a controversial decision in the Longford game on Saturday where Joshua Gergie went down early in the second half, I think it was, inside the area. And I thought it looked like a penalty every day of the week, and he was booked for diving. So referees, they have to make a decision. And from I haven't seen that decision back, but from what I heard from people that were that side of the ground, they all said it was a stonewall penalty. So it's difficult, you know what I mean? It's tough.
Yeah, no, I hear what you mean. But without giving like complete shite talk, like these things probably even themselves out. Like
fair play to the what's the 54 club, is it, or the Harps supporters club? The
54 crew. Sounds about right.
Crew,
yeah,
54 crew. At least they didn't go releasing any statements like their
thank
neighbors.
Thank God. Well done, boys. You deserve a couple of points for just for doing that.
Yeah.
I think if you want to be trying to be even enough, the ref, it was probably going so fast, but I think the player, as you said, planted his feet because he booted the ball away. He wasn't getting on the end of it. I think it went straight into the keeper's hands without even bouncing. So I can see, you know, the speed of it. But like, if you look at the whole lot of it, I can't see how a penalty was given.
Yeah, look, harsh on Harps maybe, but I think it's going to be a long season for them.
Yeah,
to be honest. Bray Wanderers 1-3. I had predicted the week before that they'd open up on Treaty, and that didn't really happen. But I think I was a week
it nearly early. Happened.
I was a week early with the prediction. Dundalk 3-0 up after 31 minutes, but my goodness, it was made easy for them by the Bray defending. It was absolutely shambolic for all three goals. Particularly the first.
Yeah, this was the first game on the new AstroTurf as well. So like, you know, good occasion for Bray, even though, you know, the entire country hates AstroTurf pitches.
New LED lights as well too, I'll give them that.
Yeah, did, absolutely. And yeah, which is lovely, and like it's good to see the clubs are trying to, you know, get that on. But like, as you said, the defending was just insane. Like I nearly didn't understand what was going, like, did the ref blow the whistle, we'll say, for Horgan's goal? Like, everybody just kind of stopped. Really poor defending. Max Murphy unfortunately had just ball watching. Killian Cantwell doesn't do much either there, and look, a really stupid goal to give away, because like, you know, you're going to be under pressure. These are the league leaders. They've only dropped a couple of points all season so far. You can't be doing this shit. Like, you have to be on it, and taking control of the situations at the back. But look, that never really occurred. So yeah, poor night at the office for Bray, to say the least. But like, just on Bray, I'd have reservations about them, as we mentioned, limited about a number of teams this season. I think they're one of the other ones as well.
Yeah, very much so. And that brings us to what was an absolute thriller. One of the most dramatic games I've done on LOI TV, I have to say. Longford Town 3, Kerry FC 2. This was an absolute thriller, and it had a very dramatic ending with Kerry missing a last gasp penalty at the end to rescue a point. Longford Town grabbing their first win of the season. I think last year, Longford's first win didn't come until June. So this is a much welcome boost for them.
It absolutely is. And, you know, we kind of described Longford last year as finding ways to lose games.
Yeah.
And I think last season, you know, we'll say even at the start of the season or towards the end of the season, that might have been the case. I know Longford improved in the second half of the season, but that would have been an opportunity for them to lose a game the other night. Like, I know they did their very best to drop points.
Hmm.
With the penalty concession, which was mad, and no need for anybody to make a challenge on that. I know there was a bit of talk, was at Halifax or Aaron Walsh that made the contact, but I think it was a very welcome win for Longford. Unfortunately, for personal reasons, I wasn't there for most of it, but I did get to see the winner for Longford Town and the penalty miss, so that was nice. But look, important win for Longford Town, as you said. Really tough on Kerry, like I said, to get a man sent off as well for... Did he put his head in, did you say?
I didn't say that. Don't be putting words in my mouth.
I'm asking.
It was a bit of a scrummage going on before a corner, and I could see, and I said it, that he was the main instigator. He was the one that was doing a lot of grabbing and shoving and mouthing. And then the red card came out, so I don't know whether he's raised his hands, whether he's put his head in, whether he said something, but he did look to be the main instigator in whatever was going on there. Alabi, who actually had a very good game.
Yeah,
I know his team conceded 3 goals, but he impressed me. That was the first time I've seen him. He was very solid in his defence. And I just want to say about Kerry, first half they were absolutely excellent, but didn't start the game great, but once Longford scored, Kerry very quickly responded. And once they got the equaliser on 28 minutes from Brookwell, I thought it was an own goal at the time. Brookwell was credited with the goal. From 28 minutes right up until 45, they had Longford on the ropes. And they went 2-1 up on 42 when Palmer, and another player I was seeing for the first time, Luke Palmer, I think he's only a young chap, he was very impressive. He really caught my eye on the evening. So did Brookwell. I know we had an interview with him recently. I'm not sure if it was on the pod or the members club, but we spoke to him anyway. Here between the stripes, and he's a lad that was in the Newcastle and Liverpool academies. I named out some of the players on commentary the other night. He played with Curtis Jones at Liverpool, young Lewis Miley at Newcastle. There was a few other players he came up through the ranks with, and I was really impressed with him in the middle. And the man that really caught my eye for Kerry the other night was Ronan Tehan in the middle.
Yeah.
He was absolutely running a hole through Longford at times in the first half, but Kerry, the halftime whistle came at the wrong time for them. They had Longford on the ropes. I think another 5 or 6 minutes, Kerry could have got a third goal before the break and gone 3-1 up. I don't think Longford would have come back, but Longford started the second half very well, got their equaliser through Gergie, and then Walsh coming on. That's a great story in itself. Walsh coming on, scoring his first goal for the club. He's been with the club 3 years. He's played something like 12 league games because he's had 2 ACL injuries. So absolutely brilliant to see him getting the winner the other night. Then you had the red card, then you had the missed penalty. Unbelievable drama, unscripted drama, as myself and Lyle were saying on commentary the other night. But I don't think Kerry were able to match the first half performance for large parts of the second half. So they'll feel hard done by they didn't get a point. But I think their second half performance definitely wasn't as good as the first. And that's probably what cost them in the end.
And the drop off is a problem. Like, I know you were saying, like, if they had another 5 or 6 minutes, they might have got a third.
Mm.
And the break came at the right time for Longford to give them a bit of breathing space, which they obviously needed, and it worked because they came out in the second half, as you say, a lot better. But that's, I suppose, that's probably goes to show a bit of the naivety in the Kerry side.
Yeah, and you can see the 2 set-piece goals as well, a long throw-in and a corner. So
yeah,
that's something we would have seen a lot in their first season. You know, they were in games and they were conceding a lot of set-pieces or individual errors.
Bullshit, man. Yeah, that's exactly it. Like, they were conceding junk. But I think, like, that kind of, you know, you can't have that drop off in just because of half time. Do you know what I mean? Like, you need to start maintaining a high performance and keeping, let's say, Longford under pressure in this example on Saturday.
We thought going into this game, when we were previewing this game, we were talking about Kerry being that bit hardier, a bit harder to beat, but there's still that little...
There's that softness still there. There's no
I mean, the goal last week against Bray, the goalkeeper, my goodness, one of the worst goals you'll ever see conceded, and then the goals they concede in this game. So there's just still too many errors going on if Kerry are really going to kick on up that league table. But for Longford, an absolutely huge win for them. So
and not only I just want to highlight, like, I know you mentioned Aaron Walsh as well, but it's great to see Josh Gergie coming back. He didn't start the first few games, but he's started the last couple, and to get two goals is obviously fantastic. What a finish for the first one.
Yeah, that was a great goal. Yeah, I mean, he got five goals in his first, it was his first League of Ireland season in 2023. He got five goals and they all came in the early part of the season. And then he didn't play last season. He went to Maynooth for whatever reason, but he's back now. And I think he does have that eye for goal, and he's versatile as well. He can chip in at fullback. He can play higher up. You can probably play him through the middle even. So he's I think he's a very good option to have. I think he's a very welcome return to the club.
I completely agree, and I think you mentioned he actually did fill in a few times at right back in his first season with the club, and that was, he actually performed quite well there. He's very disciplined. Like, I know he's an attacking player, but he was still able to fill in that position as well. So look, great night for Longford Town and a very welcome one.
I spoke to Wayne Groves after the game. You can get that on the members club. I know he hailed the fans for their role on the night. I was hoping to get some reaction from the Kerry camp as well, but let's just say they didn't seem to be in the best humour after the game, so I didn't get chatting to anyone, which was unfortunate. But there you go. Yeah, you can hear Wayne Groves on the members club. And look, apologies for the lack of a guest this week, but just with the international trip coming up, just wasn't doable this week. So we'll return next week and we'll have some big names for you, hopefully. Right, Gary, into the predictions league. Just update the listeners on where we are table wise. I had a stinker last week. I only got 2 points. You got 8 points. You did quite well. You got one correct score, which was Harps Cove, and then you got a lot of correct results. And then Joe Redford, who was playing for the listeners, he was a Wexford fan. He got 8 points as well. He got a correct score, Galway Waterford, and then he got plenty of correct results. So leaves the table like this. I am the bottom player on 17 points, and you are level with the listeners on 22 points. So it's just the Premier Division games. Or sorry, the first division games, I should say, we've got this weekend with the Premier Division on an international break. And we'll start with the Between the Stripes derby, Dundalk against Longford Town.
Well, yeah, geez, you must be really conflicted. You must be in bits over this one.
Why do you think I'm leaving the country in the build-up to it? me and Kira can't be in the same room.
All right, okay. Look, it's your derby, the Birko derby. What do you think? Give me your
as great as the result was for Longford the other night, and by the way, look, I think it is going to be a long season for Longford. I think they'll improve as the season goes on, as I've said before, but they're going to be probably scrapping around the bottom half. I think if you're getting that level of entertainment every week in the home games, like you did against Athlone, and then an even better game last week against Kerry, I think the fans will accept that because they're coming out and they're able to enjoy something and get behind something. But Longford have conceded, what is it, 7, 8, 9 goals now this season? I think it's 7, is it? 5 against Cove. No, 7. Yeah, 9 goals in 4 games. So they're conceding over 2 goals a game. Are they going to go to Oriel and score 3 goals? The answer is no. I do know Dundalk, a bit like Longford, are going to be missing a few players through international call-ups. Emre Topku, great honour for him to get a call-up to the Turkish under-21 side. But he'll be missing the game for Longford. And you think of Dundalk's midfield, the likes of Harry Groom, A. Dervin, you could have really done with Topku in there for this game. But I know they'll be without Sean Keogh, a player I'm a big fan of, and Vinnie Leonard, and they've got a few injury doubts. So I was going to go for a bigger scoreline, but I think all in all, Longford can't be conceding the sort of goals they're conceding and going into a game away from home against the title favourites and have any real chance of getting anything out of this. So I'll be going for a comprehensive 3-0 win to Dundalk here.
Brutal, lad. I'm going to go for... Now, I was getting a bit of jibing about me. If Longford Town are in for a long night, I'd just say 1-1 to Longford Town. But I'm encouraged. I know Kerry are obviously a different prospect here to Dundalk. But the bit of bits that I did see, I was happy with Longford Town. I know Andy Spain went off as well, but he's actually all right. So Longford Town will be relatively have a full complement. Apart from Topco, as you said, I'm going to go for
1-1.
Yeah. I was thinking of an in-lil. I think it could be, but I think like some of the Dundalk have a couple of ringers as well. Do you know what I mean? They can pull something out. If it's a long night for them, I think they have like the individual quality that might be able to pull something out of the fire. So I will stick for a 1-1.
Okay. And our old pal Git is playing this week for the
Git.
Long time listener, St. Pat's fan. He's going for 2-1 win to Dundalk. Wouldn't be the worst result in the world, in all truth. Right, Harps against Bray.
Oh, God. This is going to be a tough game. I will go for... I think a 1-1 draw is the only real result here. I can't see either team doing enough to score more than a goal apiece.
I think
probably Harps, a penalty in the middle of it as well.
I think if Harps are looking at the highlights of the Dundalk game, they'll definitely say we can get after this Bray team from set pieces. I could see Harps getting a bit of joy there. Bray and Harps, the word we keep using is limited. I think this will be a very low scoring game. I think you've gone 1-1. Git's going 1-1. I'd probably go 1-1 myself, but I'm going to just jazz it up here and go 1-0 to Finn Harps.
I think if anybody's going to win it, I think you're right. I just have very many concerns about where the goals are going to come from. Like it's going to be a set piece again for Harps. Yeah, I see where you're going. I think.
Like Bray, to be fair to Bray, they showed a bit of hardness recently going down to Kerry and winning. I think they had a bit of fortune on the night.
But that was pure foot. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'm going to go for 1-1.
I'd be shocked if there's over 2.5 goals in anyway. Cove against Athlone. This could be tasty.
Yeah, big challenge here for Athlone to travel down. Like, you know, we were talking about they've turned a bit of a corner, let's say. But I think it's a big test for Cove here, who had a lucky win. Let's say up in Finn.
Of course, Longford are going to beat Dundalk, so this will be a chance for Cove to go top on the night.
Well, there you go. Now you're talking. Is there a bit of Cove motoring a bit at the minute? Are they clicking very well?
Definitely clicked in their last home game anyway, didn't they?
Yeah. I think it's going to be a tough night for Athlone. I'm going to go for a 3-1 win to Cove.
Oh, okay.
I still have reservations about the defence in Athlone.
Get going 2-0 to Cove. I'm going to go 2-2 in this one. I think this could be a very, very entertaining game. Maybe Cove 3-2 even, but I'll go 2-2. Wexford against Kerry.
I'll only really look at Wexford here. I know that they'll be without Alabi for getting sent off the other night, and he'll probably miss the 3 games because it was probably down to his violent conduct.
You know, Wexford only conceded 1 goal all season.
Who was that against?
Against Athlone.
Oh, in their only loss.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, look, actually, that really backs up what I was going to say, because I can't see Kerry scoring here.
Of course, Kerry were without Ryan Kelleher the other night. From what I understand, he'd be out for another couple of weeks. Yeah, he's a huge blow. I don't think they would have lost the game against Longford if they had Kelleher, particularly if he was standing over the penalty at the end.
I think he would have slotted it. Yeah.
Yeah, I think he's a huge absence for them at the moment. But if they play like they did in the first half against Longford, I definitely think they could cause this Wexford team some problems. Wexford, it's quite a young team. Again, just to go back to Kerry, I suppose, and some of the aspects of their play the other night, and I mentioned it on commentary a few times, they have players in that squad now that they wouldn't have been able to dream of bringing to the club when they first joined the League of Ireland. Like Alex Dunn came in from UCD there, Brookwell's come in from Cork City, and Joe Adams, someone I spoke about on the pod previously, that played 30-something games for Dundalk only a few seasons ago in the Premier Division. Now, he went back to the UK and he was playing junior football over there, essentially, or a very low level in the non-league. And he didn't look the fittest chap in the world now the other night against Longford, but he still had touches of class about him. So if he can get fit, he could have a huge impact at this level. So they've got players there that, you know, they couldn't have dreamed, as I said, of having a few seasons ago. So they've got players that definitely could hurt this Wexford team. I'd still probably just about fancy Wexford, though. with oh, that yeah, defence.
I'm going 2-0 to Wexford.
Okay, I'm going to go 1-0 to Wexford and get going 2-0 as well. UCD against Treaty. Is this the game where UCD take off, or will Treaty pick up another big result here?
I can't see how, like, what evidence is there that UCD are going to get it together and put a team to the side? I don't think it's going to happen here. You know, if you look, even looking at the Wexford game, a comical goal was the only difference in it. And as you mentioned, the Wexford keeper did quite well in the game. I'm going to say, I think it's going to be a very tough game. I'm not sure how well that pitch has recovered as well. I'm going to say 1-0 to Treaty.
Yeah, I won't be at all surprised if Treaty win this. I'm going to go 1-1. I think UCD have scored in every game bar the first game when they got hammered by Wexford, but they've scored in all the other games. The pitch is probably a good leveller here. I mean, Treaty have got the big man up there, Trippier, I think his name is, the Croatian lad, and he's an absolute battering ram. So I don't think they'll be too worried about the pitch. They can go direct to him, get players off him. I wouldn't be surprised if Treaty win this. But I'm going to go 1-1, but definitely I think Treaty have a chance here. And so does Git. He's going 1-0 to Treaty. So there you go. All of us expecting UCD's slow start to continue. So yeah, that's the first division games. The Premier Division returns the week after. Just to give a quick mention to some of the games that are coming up after the break, you've got Waterford against St. Pat's. Could that be a game where maybe Waterford come back to life? The sort of team that can just blow hot and cold. So I wouldn't be surprised if they got something out of that, actually. Sligo against Shells. Can Shells pick up form after the break? Bows against Galway. That's going to be an absolutely huge game for Anna Reynolds. Cork against Drogheda. That would be interesting as well. And Rovers against Derry. So some lovely games to look forward to when the Premier Division eventually returns after the break.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I know, well, we'll be having a pod next week and we can look into them in more detail. But yeah, I think that Bowes Galway game is going to be a very, very big game because, you know, the way Galway are going, conceding nothing, it'll have to be a huge performance from Bowes to get out of that game.
Yeah, it's a very short BTS hotline this week because I only put the tweet out this afternoon, given it's an express pod, so we didn't get that many responses, just a couple here. Git, who played in the Predictions League, thanks to him. Can we have a couple of minutes to talk about Git Forrester? And he has a little goat emoji next to his name. Had his preseason cut short due to an injury and has come back in and been outstanding. Pats are a different team with him in it. I know you've maybe not been the biggest Chris Forrester fan in years gone by, but in the last couple of games, he has looked really back to his best.
Well, look, it's great to see, it's great to hear, but like, I was disappointed, particularly that European run a couple of years ago, if you remember that game out in Tala that me and you went to.
Yeah, was that CSK Sofia, I think?
Oh, I can't rightly remember. But I was just disappointed with, like, you know, he just seemed to be floating in and out of games, not really being the, not that you're looking for him to be in the talisman, but like you're looking for him to be getting 7-8 out of 10 every week. And, you know, you want certain contributions to be made from like your captain, you know, like he's a, you know, obviously important, you know, important player for them, but like it's great to hear that he's actually coming back to what we might have expected from him in the last few years.
Yeah, he played one unbelievable disguise ball in behind the other night. I can't, would the keeper say, but it was offside, I can't remember, but the pass itself was, oh geez, it was class. Julian Canny, will Galway United ever lose again? Where does it go? Better question, not to say Julian, but where can they finish this season?
They can definitely finish in Europe.
Top four?
Yeah.
At the expense of who?
Derry.
Mm-hmm. See that.
You know, I think probably some of the difficulties, like the one concern I'd have is that they need to be turning some of the draws into wins. Like if they want to be keeping pace and keeping up there, like if you end up with so many draws that you're not getting, I don't want to say the rub of the green or whatever you want to call it, but like you want to get something coming out. Yeah, I think they can do it though this season.
I mean, as I said recently, there was a number of games there where I felt they didn't play well and they still came away with a point. So if they can come back fit and fire
and turn it up a bit,
break, yeah.
Then definitely, I think fourth is a, or I think top three, to be honest, is a real, very viable target.
Very good. Very exciting times. Before we go, Ireland, Bulgaria, I know you're not traveling. Myself and a friend of the pod are. To be honest, I know little to nothing about this Bulgarian team, but over two legs, with the second leg being in Dublin, you'd be very, very disappointed if Ireland don't win this tie.
Yeah, definitely.
Bookmakers make us favourite for the away leg. Can't be too many away games that Ireland have been favourites for in recent years.
You know, and it's tough. Like, this is the first camp of the year. This is the first time since when?
The England game, yeah.
Oh, God. Yeah, look, I don't really know much about Bulgaria, to be quite honest.
They finished second in their Nations League seed table. So they're obviously trying to get promoted while we're trying to stay up. They were second behind Northern Ireland, but the other teams in the group were Belarus and Luxembourg. I know Luxembourg seemed to be improving a few years ago when they came to Dublin and played us off the pitch, but that seems to have leveled out a little bit. Belarus obviously have been in and out of the international stage in the last couple of seasons, so wasn't the strongest group that they came through. But if you go back through their results, I don't think they got hammered 5-0 by Northern Ireland in one of their games. But I think otherwise, if you go back a couple of years, there's some decent results there. 2-2 draw away to Serbia, 2-2 draw with Hungary. There are a couple of results that stand out there. So I don't think it'll be a walk in the park. I think if Ireland can just come away from Plovdiv with any sort of a result and then finish it off in Dublin, you take that. But I'd be very, very disappointed if they don't win the tie over two legs.
Yeah, I'd be inclined to agree with you. Like, I think it would be a tough game away. Like, it's in Plovdiv as well. Bit of a trek to get to for Ireland heading over there.
Tell me about it.
But look, I'd be positive. I think the Heimer situation and all the other guff going on about it and the FEI in general can be put to the side here for this week. I think he needs to make sure that there's bite in the Ireland team.
Yeah.
No passiveness. I don't want to see Collins going around with 100 passes to his name or any of this other piss and like bring it back to the Aviva or anything like that. I would be looking for a positive Ireland trying to put Bulgaria under pressure from minute one and a positive result over the two legs. But look, we'll see next week.
I think he puts himself under huge pressure if they lose this over two legs.
Big time. Absolutely big time. I'd be concerned about that myself.
Look, we will wait and see how it all plays out. There seems to be a bit of talk that could be a little bit ropey over there for Ireland fans. So hopefully everyone gets over there safely and gets back safely.
A safe trip is all we're looking for, yeah.
Yeah, and hopefully I'll be back next week to give you another podcast with Gary Riley. So look, that's where we'll leave it. That was a bit of an express pod due to the fact I am travelling to that game in the next couple of days. So as I said, hopefully we'll be back next week and we'll be back with our usual format and a couple of guests will join us. But until then, make sure you're keeping in touch with us across all our social platforms. Search for Between the Stripes on Twitter and on TikTok. You can check out our members club as well. There's links on both the TikTok and on our Twitter. And we were brought to you by our sponsors, Quinn AV. Check out quinnav.ie for all your sound, lighting and AV solutions. So it's Bulgaria for me on the Thursday and hopefully touchdown in Dublin in time for the game in Oriel on Friday. So if you do see me at some of them games, be sure to say hello. Until then, thanks for listening and we'll speak to you next week.
Thanks for listening. Check out betweenthestripes.net for all your favourite BTS content in one place. See you all next week.